Christy Cox recently released her first album, Ricochet, on the Mountain Fever record. We're going to talk to Christy in the second hour of today's broadcast. Wonderful album. It's getting all kinds of great reviews, and it should. So happy to have Christy as a guest. A lot of interesting things to discuss with her. You'll just have to wait around and find out. And thanks so much for tuning in. Very happy to welcome to Unreal Bluegrass, Christy Cox. How are you, Christy?
I'm very well, Steve. How are you?
I'm great. We found out off the air that you and I, we're both lawyers.
Yes.
Yeah.
We share a passion for right and wrong and bluegrass.
Well, I don't know about the right and wrong part, but we do law. And every once in a while we get it right. Sometimes we get it wrong. But, yes, we certainly strive for justice. That's what we raise our hand and say that we will do. Were you a lawyer in Australia then?
I was, yeah. I did corporate law. So
okay.
All the fun things like, contracts and trademarks and all that really, really boring stuff.
So then, and we'll get off of this topic quickly because I want to talk about your latest album, Ricochet, which I love. So when you came to America, then you had to take a new bar exam.
Yes.
Okay.
I had to go back and do 6 more subjects. Yeah, because we don't have all the constitutional stuff there, so I had to learn all that. So.
And the reason is you don't have our Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense.
Correct.
Cool. All right, that's interesting. So just a little sideline. The new album, Ricochet, I've played a lot. I have a couple of your albums in my media library. Is this the second or third on this label that you can remember?
This is the first on this label, and
Mountain
I've had
Fever.
Two previously with Mountain Heart.
Mountain Heart, okay.
Yeah.
And I looked in the notes. It mentions in there a couple things that you have. This is your fifth album, so have the others been released here?
No, only in Australia.
Oh, okay, all right. And then you also make note of the fact that of your two bands, you still have a band that you can gather together in Australia if you need to go back there and play some shows.
Yeah, I do. I have players that I use when I'm home. I try to go home twice a year to do a couple of tours, or sometimes I'll get booked for one of the major country festivals, which I'll fly in for a weekend and fly out of again. But it's just not cost effective enough to take my band from here back home. I have musicians in both countries.
I've had some guests on the program from Australia that play bluegrass. How did Australia get into bluegrass music?
I'm not entirely sure. I know that one of the first bands to really showcase it was the Hamilton County Bluegrass Band, and they were from New Zealand. They had members from both Australia and New Zealand in the band, and they used to do a lot of the country music festivals, and then they toured around with our biggest country star, which was Slim Dusty. So he's kind of like our Mel Haggard.
Okay, that makes sense. Mm-hmm.
He was our biggest country star, and he had them travel around and use them as their band for the country stuff, but then do open a show playing bluegrass. So I think that was pretty much where it really started. We've got quite a few people that, Trev Warner, who is Kim Warner from the Green Card's dad.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Kim
has been on the show. Yeah, Kim has been on the show.
Yeah, he was probably one of the main guys as well to really launch it, but it really has taken quite a jump in the last probably 10 years. So we went from having about 4 to 5 festivals to having around 10 now. So we automatically fall into the country music scene back in Australia. The country scene is a lot bigger than bluegrass. So we kind of play the country scene and we play the folk music scene. So it's growing. It's really exciting to be a part of that process back home and be a part of introducing people to bluegrass music.
You have so many great, first of all, you co-write, you write several songs co-write, but you write with some great songwriters, but you have so many great musicians on this album. I mean, it really is a star-studded list that not only provide musical skills, but also sing with you on several of these songs. That's a nice lineup.
Thank you. I'm very blessed that every time I call them, they agree to come back and play with me again. So I'm very, very lucky.
That means you're paying them.
Probably not what they deserve.
No, I'm sure they're not. You can never pay them what they deserve.
No, this is true. But no, I've been very, very lucky, and I'm sure having Jerry Sally in the producer seat really helps with that. He has great connections in the industry, and you know, people often say to him, well, if you believe in her, then sure, I'll give her a go. So I'm really lucky to have him in my camp. So.
Jerry Salley, nobody speaks ill of Jerry's songwriting and his judge of talent.
No.
No, he's the real deal. You have connected up with, and he writes several songs with you on here. You've connected up with one of the gems, I think, in Nashville, certainly in bluegrass.
Yeah, I would have to agree with you on that.
There are, Christy, there are 10 songs on this album. I have you as co-writing 3 of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then you do, we'll start at the end, because we were talking about Australia. Casey Chambers, we used to get her on the radio here when we had good radio. Now we don't hear her anymore. But in 1999, I heard her on the radio, and I bought an album called The Captain, and I was absolutely in love with Casey Chambers. And you happened to pick a song from, not just for my benefit, but on the album, you have a song from, I think, from that vintage. Is that right, the very last one?
Yeah, I Still Pray. That was on Casey's Barricades and Brick Walls album.
Okay.
So the album that came out after The Captain.
Oh, okay.
The Captain was just an iconic album in country music back in Australia. It pretty much launched country music into the pop market.
Oh, great.
It's huge because she's just very, very, very talented and very controversial at the same time. So she pretty much got on like national television, said that radio presenters won't play her because she's ugly. And the next day she had a number one single. So.
I don't remember that part of it. I wouldn't say that anyway, but I mean, she had a fair amount of airplay here, like I said, and I'm not being facetious. There used to be good radio programs, a lot of them out of colleges near where I live, which is in Kentucky, Cincinnati area. There aren't any anymore, so you don't get to hear. I know she was surprised how many albums she actually has since 1999, but she's been very busy. We just don't get to hear her anymore.
Yeah, no, she's brilliant. She's over here quite a bit, actually, and she's just released a new album, and I'm really good friends with her brother who lives around the corner from me, so
oh,
we
good.
Get to hang out a bunch, but... When 1997, I think The Captain was released in Australia, and at that point was when I kind of thought, you know, I might only be a teenager, but if Casey can do this, I can do this. And she really was one of my idols, and she grew up in the same town as me.
No kidding. It's
one of those things where I was like, if Case can do this, I can do this, and I... Yeah, she's just been a huge inspiration to me, and I've always wanted to sing I Still Pray a cappella. I just always thought it would make a great a cappella gospel.
It is great, and it's the last tune on the album of the 10, and you do it with Josh Swift, who is a, you know, award-winning dobro player, but he also can sing apparently better than I would have known.
Yeah, he's an incredible bass singer, probably one of the greatest bass singers I think we have in the industry. Yeah, he's just brilliant.
I figure then, let's go back to the top of the album. I want to get to, I know you have a new release, and we've, all of us on this end of the microphone have played a lot of Ricochet. It was just my favorite tune, unbeknownst to me, that it would become as popular. I'm glad that it did. But the very first tune on the album is one that you co-wrote. It's called South of North Carolina. That sounds a little bit like it could be kind of about your journey, a little bit. Not necessarily, but there's some parts in that, aren't there?
Yeah, you nailed it on the head. It really is about, for some reason, when I'm feeling homesick and I want to go home to Australia, if I drive into North Carolina, I feel at home. And I'm not sure if it's because I grew up in the mountains, or we call them hills in Australia. I grew up in the mountains, and just driving through Asheville just reminds me of home. So my band lives there, and it really is just... one of those places that I just wanted to write a song about. You know, I kind of get a little overwhelmed sometimes thinking about the fact that playing bluegrass brought me all the way from Australia.
Well, you do talk about some of the some of the towns in your journey here, and I just think it's a very upbeat. The tempo is very up, so I think you start. I like the way songs are arranged on an album, and I know there's a lot of thought that goes into that. But that one starts off in relatively high gear. Then you get into the second song, "Cry Me a River," which is not, I mean, it shouldn't be, because it's a sad song about, you know, people breaking up, which happens.
Yeah, sometimes.
Yeah, oh, it does.
I recorded that song purely for the guitar intro. I just fell in love with the guitar intro. I just wanted it on my album. the guitar in that song is just, I don't know why, it struck a chord. And I was like, I have to record this song.
Struck a chord. You didn't even know you did that. You didn't even know you did that, struck a chord. The guitar struck a chord.
There you go.
It's great. It's a beautiful, I mean, it is a very sad, you know, you don't have enough, tears aren't enough, and you cry me a river, and it's not the old Julie London song, in case anyone's listening. It's a new song, and you may or may not know Julie London, but her big thing was Cry Me a River way, 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 way before I was born, probably.
I did not know that. I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, I mean, you can if you have time, but you don't have to. Just Me Leaving Again. The third song. You have so many, and make sure that you mention to me people that are joining you singing. We can go through the band on this album a little more, but you have Donna Ulysses, Jerry Salley, I believe. Does he contribute some vocals and other people?
Yeah. Donna Ulysses on this track. She wrote this song with Jerry, and Jerry's singing harmonies on every single track, so that's a nice, easy one. And we've got Brandon Rickman coming up on a duet as well.
So yeah.
I was very lucky to get a bunch of good friends in the studio to sing with me. So
yeah, I bet This Cold is the one with Brandon. He co-wrote that with Jerry, and it's a very moving, touching song.
Certainly is.
and then you get to what was my instant favorite when I listened to the entire album when I got it. The title cut was Ricochet, and first of all, you have a beautiful voice. You have a very strong voice. I like to listen to singers who get what they go for. In other words, you're not holding back. You're going for the notes that you want as loud as you want. I don't think it's just a studio effect. I think you have a very strong and powerful voice, and I like the way it comes off in the upbeat things, and also when you just want to be, you know, soft, but yet also make your point, like A Bed This Cold. I think it's a gorgeous duet.
Thank you very much.
And Ricochet just takes off, and you're going on that. You even kick it into a higher gear halfway through it. It's just that to me was my instant favorite, and for no particular reason, not that I didn't like the rest of it, but Ricochet just took off.
Thank you. It's I don't even know why I made it the album title. I think I just really liked how just simple it was and how quick it was. And I've never had just a one word title before, and it just kept sticking there. Jerry and I went through a bunch of other titles. I was like, no, I just keep coming back to Ricochet. So we called the album Ricochet. And I must say the arranging, that's got a lot to do with Jerry Salley. And when I'm in the studio, he really pushes me to get, he knows what I'm capable of more than what I know I'm capable of myself. And we have moments in the studio where I'll be in tears because he's, you know, pushed me to the point of breaking. And I think that's what you need in a producer. I think if you're paying somebody, they should strive to get the best out of you. And Jerry's done that on every single album that we've done. And he, I'll be singing lines in the studio that I don't think I'm capable of. And then I somehow miraculously pull them off, and then I've got to learn them to do live. So
you have to listen. This is funny. This came up the other day. I was talking to John McHugh and a Nitty Gritty Dirt Band. In order for them to do a song when they were touring recently, they had to go back to their old albums to learn how to play it again because they didn't know how. Do you have to go back and listen to your phrasing or what you did on a song on a record when he pushes you that hard and maybe the next day you forget how you nailed it?
Once I kind of get it, it kind of sticks in my memory, I think. But it's more, I like now I'm doing the new album stuff on the road.
Oh, okay.
If somebody asked me for a song from the last album, I got no idea how it goes anymore. Oh, that's in the Dropbox. It's not in my brain anymore.
Then the next tune we're going to get to, I can almost smell the smoke. The next tune you co-wrote with Jerry, this is one of the three that you wrote, is right where you left it. And I have arrows. When I make notes to talk to someone like Christy Cox, I write the songs out and I put arrows indicating tempo and different things like that are interesting to me. And this is not one of the up-tempo, but it's also not a very slow song either.
No, I do like my mid-tempo songs. I think that there needs to be more mid-tempo songs. There's lots of slow songs and there's lots of really fast songs in bluegrass, but sometimes it's nice just to have that little difference in a live show especially. And with this album, one of the things I said to Jerry is I want to be able to play the album from start to finish live. I don't want to have any fillers. I don't want to have any songs that I don't end up doing.
Yeah.
I want to record 10 tracks that I can play live, and to have a show that flows. You can't just have slow or just fast songs. So, yeah.
When you play, let's say you're playing the album, if I can use that phrase, something that I may be stealing from you or maybe not understanding what you said, but when you play the album live, let's say you're doing a show, do you play it in the sequence that's on the album? Is that because it looks to me like you've taken some thought into topics and tempo and as you lay this album out, is that kind of your intent to do it live that way also?
I do mix in some songs from my previous albums as well, like a couple of the hits, so to say, and I say that, you know, making the commas with my fingers, the hits. So especially.
I'm glad you said that because I couldn't see you doing it. So.
I back in Australia, especially, I have songs that have been number one on country radio and things like that. You know, people in the audience, they want to hear.
Oh, nice.
So I'll mix it between, you know, the old album and the new album stuff. But essentially, you know, when I sit down with an album, I don't know if it's the lawyer in me and that side of my brain that's working. I sit there and I have a plan of what I want for the album, and then I look for songs or write songs to fit it. So okay. I'm definitely an artist first and a songwriter second, and everything is very chronological to me, so it has to work.
So in a rare conversation with Christy Cox, we're talking about lawyers, and it's not a bad turn at the end of the discussion. It's actually, this is a good thing for the way your mental process works. I thought, where's she going to go with this? But no, it actually kind of, yeah, okay, I can, yeah, that's a good thing for a lawyer, the lawyer part of your brain.
I sit there and I go, okay, well, you know, I want the album to tell a story about the journey that I'm on, and I want it to, you know, have this many fast songs and this many of this tempo and this one minor song or this and this and this, and, you know, and I don't know why my brain works like that, but it does, so it's very formulated. My albums are always very formulated, so.
I think that's a good thing. I don't like albums that are just sort of, you know, hear some songs, stick them on there. I like someone who thinks about the progression, because if they're on this show, I'm going to ask them and they better have an answer. I always look at it. Even if they don't know, just make one up. For the future, if you're back on and you don't know, just make up a reason. Tell me you did it. I don't care. I just have to have an answer to that, because that's my part of my lawyer brain.
There you go.
Then the next song then is the one that's going to be released, I think, as a single. I Can Almost Smell the Smoke. Tell me a little bit about that one.
Jerry pitched this song to me on our very first album together in 2008, and it's always kind of been sitting in my mind that I wanted to record it. The demo of it is very, very 90s country, very 90s country, but I still just really loved it. I just knew that it would work with that minory banjo-y sound, so I'm making up words now. I just knew that it would work, and I said to Jerry, I think it's time to record I Can Almost Smell the Smoke. And we were sitting down and we were trying to figure out what the next single would be, and we just happened to be out for dinner having Mexican with Kyle Cantrell, and he said to me, I think it should be I Can Almost Smell the Smoke. And
good.
I said, well, Kyle, if you say it should be, then
that's what it'll be. Yeah, sure. The banjo, we're going to get to Sweet English Rose, which tells an interesting story, but so I don't forget, you mentioned banjo. I looked down at Aaron McDerris, Banjo Player of the Year, Justin Moses, Dobro Midland, he also plays about everything, Jason Roller on fiddle and guitar, Mike Bubb, everybody's favorite bass guy, and maybe one of the nicest guys on the planet, Jerry Sally, harmony vocals, Maggie Sally, Brandon Rickman is singing with you on Bed This Cold. Michael Rogers, I don't know, and he has a vocal on the opening song, South to North Carolina. It's just not a name that I know. It doesn't mean anything. I don't know a lot of people, but that's not someone that I know. Can you fill me in on that a little bit?
Yeah, Michael Rogers, he wrote that song with us. He was sitting in a writing session with us, and I'm trying to think of the guy that he plays with. And it's a country act, and I think his name's Craig, and I can't remember his last name, but he is a brilliant guitarist and an absolute brilliant vocalist.
Okay.
I think he did play with Doyle Lawson quite a while back.
Okay.
I think he was in Doyle Lawson's band quite a while back, but He doesn't do much bluegrass anymore, but he should. I think he should.
And Donna Ulysses, who everybody knows, she co-wrote and then sang with you a lot, and I can hear her voice so distinct. I also think that she's just a very fun person to be around. Maybe in the studio, not so much, but to me, every time I've seen her, she seems to enjoy what she's doing. So I would think that in a writing process or in a recording process, not only does she have that incredible high level of award-winning talent, she also just seems like a good person to have in the mix, to me, I do that.
Definitely. Yeah, no, she's great.
And then we've already talked about Josh Swift doing the vocal with you on I Still Pray. I know him as a dobro player, and I knew he sang, but I've never got a chance to hear him sing this clearly on a duet a cappella style, and it's a gorgeous. Let's talk then about Sweet English Rose, because there's a story in that you know much better than I do, because you're Australian.
Yeah, I was actually on tour down in Tasmania, which is a little island. It's actually a state, but it's an island off of the coast of the big island that we call Australia. And it's I was down on the coast in Hobart, and I was standing on the dock, and I was reading this. You know how they have the historical signs?
Yeah.
That, you know, most people wouldn't read, but for some reason I did this day. So I sat there and I read it. It was telling the story about how Australia was the first place in the world, and Hobart in particular, because they all landed in Hobart. But Hobart in particular was the first place to allow women to immigrate by themselves. So before that, you had to either come as a convict or come as a married person with your spouse, or you had to immigrate with your parents. So you couldn't just be, you know, an 18-year-old girl in London who wanted to move to Australia to be a doctor or anything like that. I just thought that was a piece of Australian history that not a lot of people knew, and I decided to write a song about it. And we wrote it in an Australian bush ballad style, which, it's what we'd call a heritage song back in Australia, you know, talking about our homelands and that kind of thing. But Australian bush ballads.
You're going to have to explain that before you leave, because I don't know what you're talking about.
The Australian bush ballad, the father of the bush ballad was Slim Dusty, so it's kind of like the father of bluegrass. Bush ballads is Slim Dusty, and that style of music is probably Australia's, if that makes sense. It's our, the music that's ours. Okay. You know, Celtic music is Irish and so on.
Sure.
But I think because, you know, we both in Australia and America have connections to England and connections to Ireland. The actual underlying pieces of bush ballads and bluegrass music are very similar. The chord progressions are similar. So turning a bush ballad into a bluegrass song was really, really easy. We just changed the instruments. It was that simple.
I've never heard that term before. I'm going to have to look it up. Yeah. It probably won't be in my only Australian book that I own. And I bet you that Robert Hughes knows nothing about it. We talked about this off the air, but I mean, so now I got to find another book, or at least, you know, Google exists now. In 1987, when I bought that book, it did not. So, it's a neat song. I didn't know either. You explained that to me. That was great. I enjoyed it. It's an interesting. So it is sort of based on a real story. Then, what did the names? Did you create the names, or just?
No, it is. I guess it's a fictional story, but it's a real topic, if that makes sense.
Wanted
to write it from the perspective of a girl that's taken the leap to move overseas, so by herself. So, you know, the concept of the song is true, but the people in the song are not. So,
yeah. Okay. It's great. It's beautiful. It made me reach for some books. So I'm glad. Thank you for educating me on that.
Not a worry.
I appreciate it. Blame It on God. Then we've talked about I Still Pray. Then Blame It on God is the ninth cut on the album. So if I look at my notes here, I have a straight line, which means it's neither up nor down tempo. I mean, that's what I heard.
There's another mid-tempo.
Mid-tempo, thank you. I'm going to eliminate my arrows and put mid-tempo. the singer is meeting someone, I think is what I get, is that, you know, it's not an accident, it's not this, you're going to blame this. It's not happenstance that this relationship develops. You're going to blame it on God. I think I'm accurate on that, am I?
Yeah, so it's kind of about you know, the girl singing about, well, I'm singing about, you know, my loved one and how they're that perfect, that there's, you know, it's the only way that somebody could be that perfect, and that perfect for you is that, you know, it's an act of God. That's pretty much what... Yeah. What the songs, you know, people look at the title and they go, blame it on God, what are you singing about? But it's actually a really positive song.
It is, it's very much. It's very much. And so far we haven't gotten to the next album where they break up. And then they're not broken up yet, so that'll be another issue down the road. That's not true. That's not going to happen. It just this is going to work out just fine for this couple, I can tell. I told you before, I don't do divorces, so I don't know what happens in that arena anyway.
Neither this, do I.
I know. Good for you. Good for you. That's one thing one more thing we have in common. I love this album, Christy. I love your the one that I have before this, too. This is so much fun to listen to. And that, to me, I tell people often when they're on this program, what I do mostly, I don't really look at talking points. I do read the liner notes because I want to know who's playing on it, but mostly I listen. I'll drive around with an album from an artist in my car for a couple of days, and I want to hear it because I can hear it better in my car. There's nobody with me, so I just really enjoyed the heck out of all of it, getting into each of the tunes and the nuances of what you're doing. And then I thought, oh, look at all these great players and all these great writers. So it works really well. I'm really happy for you. On Mountain Fever, there's probably – so you're here now, meaning – not Australia, so you're going to be touring a little bit. How would they find out where to find you, how to get this CD, and where to see you if you've got your American band up and running?
So we're touring with Amanda Cook in June, which is really exciting. I'm preparing with my label buddy, and you can find all the details out either on my Facebook page or my website, which is christycox.com. And my album's available in all the places that you buy music.
Easy answer. Thank you, Christy Cox. This was a blast. I'm so glad you were available. And I kind of messed up, and I'll confess to this. We were going to do this last night, and I screwed up the time. So we're doing this now, and it's just wonderful to get a chance to talk to you and just fill all these songs out. I appreciate your time.
No, thank you so much for having me.
All right. I'll talk to you later, Christy.
See you later, mate.
Bye-bye.